Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is March 17th, 2016, and we all know what day this is, and that would be St. Patrick's Day. And being somewhat Irish, or more than a little bit, kind of like completely, I suppose that's where I get my bad attitude from. And anyway, I like my bad attitude. Anyway, happy St. Patrick's Day. And this is where it's interesting. Everybody gets to be Irish on St. Patrick's Day, and it's one of the happier celebrations around. So at any rate, happy St. Patrick's Day 2016. This won't happen for a few more years where it falls on my show night. Just an announcement. I introduced a couple product announcements here quick. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but just quickly, the Whole House Chlorine Odor Reduction Tank, which goes down in where your water entry is in your house to remove chlorine primarily and other chlorine-related chemicals from your water. Anyway, I had said that there was free shipping, which the shipping on this is fairly expensive, about $125. I had said before that free shipping was going to end March 6th, and I had it on my web page, and it probably turned a lot of people away, but the free shipping is going to continue on that. So I've reposted that on the homepage or on the sales page. Also, just a reminder, the Animal Shed Horse Under Sink Water Filter. Now, this can be used for under your sink. It's a filter that goes under your sink instead of the one that goes on top of the sink. It's the same, pretty much the same, except the stainless steel spigot attaches to the top of the sink and the filter part goes under the sink. Anyway, that's there, but that's also what you use out in the animal shed or one in every horse stall. So one of these units for every horse in your stable. So that they have, and you can use tap water basically for your horses. Something that I ride horses, but I don't take care of horses. But water for horses is very important because they're far more susceptible to getting cancer and other diseases from basically toxic water. Horse owners go to great lengths to pasture their horses in places where there's been no Roundup or other kinds of chemicals. And so at any rate, having clean water for horses is very important so they can drink the same clean water you do in your house. It's the same filtration, the GF filters. Okay, so I won't say any more about that, but that's now posted on the webpage. I'm sorry, I said it was there before and I didn't realize it was not. So it is there now. There's a couple product changes for years and years, possibly over a decade. My main stainless steel JMCC water filter, name branded water filter, I've called the shortwave offer number 2, and many of you have purchased it under that name. I have made a name change because I'm going to much more public, let's say, venues in marketing these. So I've called this now the Kitchen Standard. So that's a name change. Also, the high-density polyethylene plastic water filters I'm now calling the Whopper 1 and the Whopper 2, not to be confused with hamburgers. The white Whopper 1 has just the old-fashioned filters, the non-GF filters, and the white Whopper 2 has 5 GF filters. So at any rate, those are just some name changes. The same products, exact same everything, just a name change. Once again, to move into this more wider scale marketing. This past week, I was a guest on John B. Wells' show. It's called Caravan to Midnight. I've been a guest there a couple times, and I will be a guest there, I'm sure, many times in the future. So, at any rate, look for that show. I believe it has aired this week. We did a pre-record, and it's a television show, so you get to see me in person, John B. Wells' Caravan to Midnight, interviewing me this week. March 14th, which was Monday, was called International Day of Action for Rivers. around the globe, 100-plus dams, hydroelectric dams, have been proposed, and of course many more have been built over the decades and, you know, past 100 years. Building dams has been a big thing, and there's certain benefits to building a dam. It can control the water flow, etc., but there's a lot of opposition now to maintaining the ambient conditions of rivers. It displaces a lot of people. But anyway, Monday was International Day of Action for Rivers, and it's part of the international movement to preserve water and water rights, indigenous people in their homeland, etc. So I'm just going to go through some of the issues here that deal with water rights around rivers. When you create a dam, some people think, oh, reservoirs, you know, better fishing, boating, things like that, you know, a water supply for a city. But there are negative impacts also. They destroy the ecosystems that are there. So typically a dam, especially a hydro dam, requires a very big reservoir. And also, to have a hydro dam, you need the inflow of water to equal the amount of water that's going through the generators to create the electricity. And this is where I've gotten somewhat involved in, let's say, some places around the world. I'm not going to be specific where proposed dams have been put in place. Governments have given the water rights over to international corporations. Money has been given under the table. But the whole point is to create the water rights for these international corporations. But here's the point. Many of these places, the amount of water flowing in the river is not sufficient to support a hydroelectric dam. And so they build a river, they calculate based on, you know, once the dam is filled up, the reservoir is filled up behind the dam, they the water then has to flow down these tubes into the generators, and the assumption here is that the reservoir remains full because the amount of water coming in is equal to the water going out. But if the water coming in is not equal to the amount that's needed to generate this electricity, then slowly, or not too slowly actually, the water level will drop down and it simply will not generate any electricity at all, or very, very little. And so the whole point here is obviously to turn the water rights over to international corporations and take those water rights away from the indigenous people. There's something more nefarious going on here, in that the local people in most of these third world countries are the people who still grow crops the old-fashioned way. They work the land by hand. They work very hard. They many times have crop failures. But the movement to get these people off the land, block them from using indigenous seed, and bring in the Monsantos and force large-scale agriculture into the area. They even tell these people, if you take so much of a drop of water out of this reservoir, you will be arrested and prosecuted. That's the level of, draconian types of activity going around these dams, where people have been beat up. The people gather together and march, and then they bring in the goons and beat them up. So it's a takeover of water rights. The government gets kickbacks. The indigenous residents get displaced, many of whom their families settled these areas hundreds of years ago. Literally hundreds, many of them as 200 to 300 years ago, their families have been living there, and they're being thrown off this land. Destruction of indigenous food, plants, and seed sources forces Monsanto corporate food into the area. Water is not available to the public, and the electricity that's generated, if it's generated, does not go to benefit the local people. It's sold many times across borders at, basically free money for the people who have the rights to the hydro dams. all of this corruption going on. I talk about this also in my ebook, Water, which is available on my website. And then I also talk about, in an MP3 lecture, I talk about Living in a Toxic World, Part 1, The Science of Water Pollution and What Can You Do is Part 2. But those you get free for any purchase on my webpage, no matter what it is, how little or how much it is. You get those items free with any purchase. So I think it's important to promote the idea of water, the concepts, and for people to really find out what's going on. I talked with a woman who lives out in California. She lives right on the beach out in California and is really wondering what's in the future there, because California seriously has water problems. Even if it rains there, they're going to still have a lot of water problems, being divided up between agriculture and the people and the large population there, not to mention living in potentially what could be a large tsunami zone. All kinds of factors for living in California. I want to do a Planet X update here. I'll just do that in a minute. A couple other quick topics. Earth Day coming up April 22nd. I did a show a couple weeks ago about the Earth Day and student project, but that project is valid for adults also. So go back a couple shows, listen to that. A project I'm working on in the background related to water is providing clean water for agriculture. Now, this is all kinds of agriculture, and so I just want to just tell you that that's going on. I don't want to go into a lot of specifics, but imagine you say you're a non-GMO organic farmer and you're doing your best. You're trying to grow these great crops so people can be healthy, but you're using polluted water. So anyway, that's something that I'm working on, not only in the United States, but in other countries also. So anyway, it's just something going on in the background. And anyway, that's enough said. Labeling. Whoa, this is a hot topic today, trying to get companies to label their food. This is like a big issue because the governments are siding with the corporations like Monsanto. And Monsanto basically owns the government. And the prevention of labeling so that you know what's in that food. Are GMO foods in that box or that bottle or whatever? Well, there's a way to beat this. And it's very subtle and it's very real and there's nothing they can do about it. And that is that you label, you have a positive labeling program in which organic, true organic, not with human waste or other forms, because there again, the government has created standards which are really not even organic. You can put a lot of different types of severely toxic chemicals on plants to make them grow and still be called organic according to government standards. So the bottom line is, don't even depend on the government to do anything. They're going to lie, they're going to cheat, they're going to get bought off by the Monsantos and the large corporations. So what we can do is develop labeling which specifies that this is non-GMO. These are the three big ones: non-GMO, organic, and clean water certified. Those are the three things that you're going to want to look for. And that labeling is not there yet, but we're going about looking to see how this can happen so that people who can certify that they have true organic. And now don't be fooled. You go to the health store, the grocery store, the yuppie organic food store. They really like to use that word organic, and everybody goes, well, I eat organic. Well, it's probably still GMO, chemical laboratory seeds and all of that. And there's a lot of chemistry in those seeds that are very bad for you, Roundup Ready, things like that. So you have to have non-GMO. And that's hard to do these days. because if you took all the non-GMO seeds in the country, you could probably put them in a relatively small room. There are some companies out there, and by the way, springtime is coming up here. I'll just name a. I don't like naming them on the air because it's. I don't like promoting products, but look for those companies. There's a couple of them out there that provide non-GMO heirloom seeds, and that's the word you want to look for. That's the more common term. So when you're buying seeds for your garden, don't go to the seed store. They're not. They're going to look at you funny. They're going to go, well, yeah, all our stuff is organic. Well, no. That it's non. The trick here is understanding GMO and non-GMO. I went to a seed store one time. It was one of the bigger seed stores up in a Midwestern city that supplied a whole region. They supplied farmers. They supplied people with flowers and for commercial gardening and all kinds of stuff. So they were a big place. When I go in and they have their seed rack there of like corn and beans and all, you know, the typical home garden type of things for vegetables. And I said, where are the ones that are non-GMO? And here's the guy who's the specialist in the seed store. And he looks at me and he goes, what do you mean? I said, non-GMO. And I said, that means the seeds will grow next year and I can use the seeds that come off of these plants to save and grow in future years. And he looked at me like I was some man from Mars or maybe beyond. Anyway, yeah, so don't go there to get your seeds. Typically through the mail. I've been on some shows recently where they advertise seed packs, non-GMO heirloom seeds and like, you know, 90,000 seeds for $20. I don't know. It's some good price. Look around for those kind of deals. And if they're packed in packages where they will last a long time, that's even better because you can plant some this spring and then carry over and then have fresh seed packages. They're packed in nitrogen. There's a couple things that destroy seeds. Oxygen, water, and air, primarily, you know, and light. Those are the things, and heat temperature change, those kind of things. So you want to keep your seeds in a region that's relatively cool, and the constant temperature, you know, fluctuating temperature is bad. Keep it cool, like in the 40s or 50 degrees, constant temperature year-round. If they're packaged in nitrogen, sealed containers, that's good. Then they'll last maybe 10 years or longer, away from oxygen and certainly away from moisture. So that's how you keep your seeds. If they're in like paper, like little envelopes, paper envelopes, you should not put them in the freezer because that draws moisture. There's a lot of moisture in the freezer. So anyway, but go to the places, the mail order places that have heirloom seeds, get your seeds there, and then buy some up for some future years. But if they're in just the paper packages, you're better off buying them every year and then save your seeds. I wish I still had my corn program going on. That was something. How many years did I run that for? 3 years maybe in a row, starting in 2008, starting in the Iowa flood. I had my Dent corn non-GMO seed program that I maintained, and that stuff went all over the planet. So, and I know there's people out there who I hear back every now and then, or somebody sends me in a picture of a ear of corn that's like a foot and a half long, and that's what they're growing, and they're still growing, saving their seeds, distributing the seeds, getting more people to grow that. That was the original non-GMO Dent corn that you would have found on the family farm. Oh, anywhere from the late 1800s up into the 1930s or possibly beyond, even when I was a kid, say in the 1950s. Oops, no, I shouldn't say that. I'm not really that old, am I? Anyway, back to this concept of labeling. We are going to have labeling, but it's going to have to come from private organizations with a little symbol. And so that when you walk into the store or wherever you buy your goods, that there's a little label there, and that label is all you have to look at to know that those three factors non-GMO, true organic, clean water certified. That means they're not using sludge water or contaminated water, that the water that they're using has been certified, like being certified organic, but certified clean, that it doesn't have all of the, I won't even list them all, you know, thousands of chemicals that are out there. So at any rate, watch for that coming down the line. Okay, update on the topic of Planet X, an update here. I said something on a show last week, and it apparently confused some people. I said I went outside, and there were some predictions by the goofy people that run around jumping up and down on the internet. There were some predictions that that supposedly this Planet X guy was supposed to be here in March, early March. Well, and of course, doggone, it didn't happen again, folks. All of these predictions, and so I made a joke on the air. I thought it was a joke. Anyway, it's facetious, not funny joke, but a facetious statement, that I went out and I looked outside, and I looked up, and I didn't see Planet X. I said, did you see Planet X? I didn't see Planet X, and I was being facetious. And so some people wrote in, not really understanding the point here. So I'm going to go into a little more detail. The point I was making is that in the springtime, a lot of times, especially leading up to May, you see all kinds of dire predictions of Planet X type predictions, or sometimes asteroids going to collide into Earth or something like that. But Planet X type predictions, and I'm saying that there is no evidence, scientific evidence. In other words, if somebody claims something, there is a standard astronomical format. This is not rocket science. It's not difficult to do. That they would put their data into, even if they had two or three measurements, they would put it in some type of they would put it into the standard astronomical format. Amateur astronomers use this all over the globe. So if these people are such rocket hot scientists that claim they have seen Planet X, then it's a simple matter to put it in the standard astronomical format. And none of them do this, of course. They go, oh, we took a picture from a crater in Central America or something, and now it's behind the sun, and now it's behind Jupiter, or whatever. This is all garbage, and I want to just simply educate people on what really constitutes an observation. And that is, when you put the data in this format, it tells you the orbit, where it's going to be, where to look at it in the sky, you know, all kinds of things that you can tell about this object, and, you know, where it's going to be in 2 months or approximately, whatever. And then other people can go with their equipment and look and see. But, of course, that doesn't happen. You got people that are going back and saying, well, ancient texts and all of this, and then making a prediction. Here's the problem. Clearly, the ancient texts tell us about destruction from celestial objects. There's no question about it. But then they go off and they go, oh, it's going to be here in, you know, and I'm not even going to say it because someone would try and chop my voice and then say Jim McCanny is saying this. So the idea is that they make some kind of prediction, which is bogus. And then people listen and they go, oh, this guy's on a radio show. Some joker's on some radio show and he's making this prediction. And what you don't know is this is probably their 67th prediction that isn't going to come true either. So anyway, and then somebody wanted to know if Planet X was going to come from the south. Here is the whole crux of that issue, and to get the full story on this, you have to get my DVD. It was the Hale-Bopp 20th anniversary release. I released it on July 23rd, 2015, last summer, and it was dealing with Hale-Bopp, the 20th year anniversary discovery of Hale-Bopp, Planet X, and the Harrington Expedition. And what I show in that video is, first of all, this idea about a 3,600-year orbit is totally incorrect. Is not true. It never could have been true for many reasons. But what I showed was that, now let me explain where that 3,600 year number came from that people keep quoting all over the place. It came from Sitchin talking to Harrington at the Naval Observatory back in the mid-1980s, or maybe 86, 87, somewhere in that time frame. At that time, Harrington's, who was the head of the Naval Observatory, working under a contract from NASA called Search for Planet X, that was Harrington's best estimate at the time. They were making estimates. They really didn't have a good, a real solid measurement to go by. But what they were looking at were the movements of the planets Uranus and Neptune being pulled down out of their orbits by some object, and they estimated it to be about four Earth masses, and it would be down directly below Uranus and Neptune back in the 1980s. So you have to retrograde, go back, bring those planets back to where they were back then. And what I discovered, along with looking at this from multiple points of view, was that what Harrington did discover in 1991, he went down to New Zealand. He was emphatic that he had discovered Planet X. He came back, and before he could release any information, he ends up dead. His information is completely buried, and Tom Van Flander and his assistant, who had prompted him to do this, Tom Van Flander comes out and he goes, "Oh, there's no such thing as Planet X." Anyway, that's a long story. If you want to hear the long version, then go get my release. It's called the Hale Bob, the Hale Bob Harrington Expedition Planet X Update. It's on my sales page. It's there. And it's going to take you many hours to go through all of that material, including some of my recordings and lectures, etc., other supporting documentation, the original NASA contracts with the Naval Observatory, etc., etc. All of that, all contained in that release. So at any rate, but the short story here is that what Harrington did discover, and he did discover this, was the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. And what my expedition last spring, almost a year ago now, down to the tip of South America, was to scan that area of the sky and make sure that there was nothing else down there that could be coming in that may have been seen by Harrington coming in after Hale-Bopp. And the conclusion is that no, there was nothing there. I scanned that area. There was nothing coming in. So what Harrington discovered was the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. Hale-Bopp came through the solar system. It's on its way out, and it was on a 4,200-year orbit coming from the south. So this whole idea, is Planet X coming from the south? Well, now I can tell you that it did, and it passed through, and this is this Nibiru? Is this Wormwood? Like I tell people, these things don't come in with a neon sign going, "Hi, I'm Nibiru, I'm Wormwood." I'm sorry, they don't have neon signs. And people make claims about Planet X coming in or something like that. What they're all doing is a lot of them are copying work that I did, working with the information that came out of Harrington. But I finally was able to put all this together and finally determine that the estimate, this is the point, that 3,600-year orbit that Sitchin got from Harrington and published all over the place was totally incorrect. It was premature information. It really shouldn't have been published and propagated to the level, and certainly not by all of the crazy people that have come through this topic in the last 20 years now, 15 or 20 years or whatever, and that's still happening today. You still have people coming through saying this same, you know, what they do is they do an internet search, they come out, they repeat it all, and then get on radio shows with no critical analysis, excuse me. But at any rate, that's the story. So is Planet X coming from the south? The answer is it actually already came and it left. It passed through the solar system. When Hale-Bopp was first discovered, it was on a very near collision course with Earth. But due to the tail drag, it slowed down over that 3.5-year period. and it missed us. We were able to move ahead in our orbit, and it missed us. That's the reason, Hale-Bopp was the reason why the Vatican built the telescope down in Arizona, was to watch Hale-Bopp. And they were coupled with NASA, Hubble Space Telescope, all kinds of other stuff. Anyway, I'm not going to say any more about that, but I just wanted, because springtime is a time when all kinds of things are going on, and a lot of, like, Planet X disinformation programs, etc. The end analysis is that you have to understand what's going on. So is Planet X coming from the south? Well, it actually already did and went through the solar system. But is that the only Planet X in the universe? No, there's many other ones. And I always talk about this. There's a history that we do not have. We simply don't know. And the people with the good equipment out there, the NASA people, etc., aren't going to tell us. They're using their equipment to do automated search programs, etc. And they're coming out with announcements, but they're really bogus announcements also. So you can't depend on the professionals. Tier 1 science isn't going to tell you. The Vatican and all of that very controlled science isn't going to tell you. So you're left with a bunch of nutcases roaming around the internet repeating the same thing over and over again, which is totally incorrect. So there you go. That's the Planet X update. Crazy world. And if you want to find out what's really going on, if there's ever any new information, if there's any other objects that could come into the solar system, I have the ability to verify it myself. And literally that's what happens. When people want real answers, they come to Jim McCanney. And that's why they tried to falsify my information. That's why they tried to put up, they took my old radio shows and cut and spliced them, put them together and put something up on the internet. They've tried everything in the world to defame me and ruin my good name, because they know that when the chips are down, when people want to know, they come to Jim McCanney to get a straight answer. Bottom line. Just want to give a little commentary on the political situation out there. I don't want to, you know, blow my horn here too much, but this is exactly where I predicted we would be. You know, a couple of years ago, I actually was saying this, that Donald Trump would be the Republican, he would come in, split the Republican Party, and be the candidate for the Republican Party. And I said Hillary Clinton would pull ahead and be the Democratic Party. The prediction that I made was that something late in the race would happen to Trump, and Hillary would cruise towards victory and be the next president. Why she isn't in prison, I'll never know. She made a statement on a debate or something on some public forum, saying that nobody died in Libya. Total lie. You know, this woman can lie. They can have people killed because of her actions. And she's just immune. So, anyway, I'm not for or against whatever. I'm very against Hillary, just the axe lady. That's the name I had for her long ago, long before a lot of you had ever really known who she was, before Billy became president. I had the name for Hillary called the axe lady, because whenever Billy got in trouble down in Arkansas, Hillary took care of business. They have a tale of a trail of death and destruction that follows them, unbelievable, through the South and then all the way to Washington and beyond. But that's a long story. Anyway, I hate to tell you this, but you're probably going to have Hillary Clinton as your next president, man. And this ain't going to be, she's going to make Obama look like a schoolboy at an afternoon cakewalk. Yeah, it's going to get ugly. Anyway, I hope that's not what happens. That was my prediction a long time ago. And at least up to this point, my prediction is coming true. I'm working on a report, actually a couple of reports, dealing with one is the Everglades, is what the conditions are in the Everglades, and another one is over in the Pacific, dealing with the Pacific Ocean. And something has been happening this year in the Hawaiian Islands. Lots of dead whales are being washed up on the beach, and of course that's a big whaling area where people go to watch the whales. They come up and cruise along the coastlines, and there's promontories where people watch and things like that. But now they're watching dead whales washing up on the beach. And of course they're saying it's due to global warming. They're making every excuse in the book. The reports I've gotten from people on the scene, and these are divers, these are people that are on the scene, say that a Japanese ship washed up on the shore and they drug it back to Japan. So that's one of the results of the tsunami there. Big pipes, not just like, you know, your house pipe or an industrial pipe in a building, but big pipes have found their way over to the Hawaiian Islands. And so anyway, this is still going on, but it's not looking good. There's some real problems, it looks like, are going on there. And this has been reported also, but nobody wants to talk about the Fukushima relationship to this. Anyway, I'll be able to get some more hard data, including Geiger counter measurements and other types of measurements, actual scientific measurements that can confirm or dispel. So we're not talking about rumors here. We're actually talking about scientific data, measurements, and relationship, because the Pacific Ocean is, man, that's really Fukushima. That radiation is lethal, and the Japanese government is doing nothing. They have done nothing but pour water on that thing, and all of that water just goes right into the ocean. It's contamination, the worst kind of contamination known to man, nuclear radiation. I just talked to a friend of mine, talk show host up in Canada, Brian Porter, and he said he was just interviewing a guy who said that over 100 of the U.S. nuclear power plants are known to be leaking nuclear water, nuclear toxic water into the ground system. Over 100 in the United States, and nobody's talking about it. They keep commissioning these long after their expected lifetimes. It's very bad. It's very bad. Nuclear is the worst kind of pollution, but the energy industry owns Washington, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the International Commission run out of the United Nations. It's just unbelievable international control at that level. But any one of these reactors going off, that San Onofre reactor they had to shut down north of San Diego, we've never had a real report come out of there as to what happened, how severe it was, where the toxic runoff got to. None of this has been made public. Completely under the radar, but shutting down that plant, a relatively new plant, $5 billion, not producing any electricity at all right now, and hundreds more on the brink of disaster in the United States. But the reason I mentioned the San Onofre installation, nuclear power plant, is because look at where the winds go from there. They go north, they go up to San Francisco along the coastline. The winds take them anywhere north, east, and south and southwest. The winds come across through Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, all of those states, south down into the Baja. Literally over the course of a year or two or 3 years, that plant will pollute literally the whole United States, because it's on the southwest corner, and that's where the prevailing winds are coming from. And then it gets up into the stratosphere. We don't really know. We don't know the extent of the pollution and how it's going into the ocean. That facility is right near the ocean. And so if that water is leaching into the ocean and that radiation is coming up in the water that then is evaporated into the literally into the rivers that flow in the atmosphere into the country, the United States, and that could be because it's much closer. It could be doing as much damage as Fukushima. Nobody is talking about this. The other record levels at the Indian Head facility, known to be leaking. Yeah, this is a disaster that is going on. Nobody's talking about it. So we're trying to get more information. The EPA just shut down, I don't know how many hundreds of testing stations all over the United States. Shut them down because the readings were going off the charts and they didn't want to tell the public. They don't want you to know, so they have shut this down. The testing stations where they monitor the air quality for nuclear radiation, they've shut them down because the readings were getting so high and they didn't want to report them. So what their solution is, shut down the sensors so nobody knows. I wanted to talk a little bit about nuclear radiation and testing facilities. What do you do in a test facility? Well, first of all, understand that in a nuclear reactor, you have plutonium now, which these reactors were never designed to burn, plutonium or uranium. They were designed to burn much lower octane nuclear fuel. And so it would be like taking a Ford Escort, a little economy car, putting nitro racing fuel in it and trying to drive around the Indy 500 at 110 miles an hour all day long. You know, that's what they're doing with these nuclear reactors. This is insane. They're decommissioning nuclear bombs to create the fuel for nuclear power plants. Absolutely insane. But when the nuclear fuel burns, I want to talk about the waste. What happens is you have a very long laundry list of byproducts that come out of that. But what you do is you already know that the percentage of, say, cesium and strontium and other, you know the pretty much the percentage of those relative to the other species of nuclear waste that's coming out of those power plants. So when Fukushima went up in smoke, they had 600,000 spent fuel rods up on the roof cooling down. That's the other problem with high-octane nuclear fuel, is you have to cool it after you've burned it. So this is a point of no return where you had to put more and more energy into cooling the spent fuel rods, then, and if those things start to, if you stop cooling them, they melt down and that stuff goes into the environment. And nothing worse than nuclear waste. 600,000 nuclear fuel rods that went up in smoke with Fukushima, all in the Pacific Ocean. Just, you know, one fuel rod would be bad, but 600,000, I mean, this is insane, absolutely insane amount of nuclear pollution. The Japanese government's not doing anything. The United States did nothing. Anyway, I want to talk about testing the air for these. Now, would you have a detector that tests for all of these hundreds of different nuclear species that you know are in the waste? Or would you go out and just test for one or two of them? And that's the end result. You would go out and you would test for one or two of these species, knowing that if that is there, then all of the rest of them are there too, and in the proportions that are typical of the waste from that plant. So you don't have to test for all, say, 100 various nuclear species. You know that they're there if you find the strontium or the other nuclear species. So you just test for one or two of them. And by knowing the contamination level of that single species, you can then make an estimate of the contamination of all the various nuclear species, radioactive species. These typically have half-lives that are on the order of 0.5 to 1 million years. So these things are not going to go away in your lifetime or your kids or their grandchildren or their grandchildren. This stuff is still going to be there in those toxic levels. and the environment does not clean this out, it's going to continue to be there. It's going to continue to spread with the ocean currents, in the air, in the rain. It's absolute insanity. I mean, they're killing this planet, and you can't go up and shake these people by the collar and say, what are you doing? Because it's all controlled by money and greed. And one of the unfortunate things is scientists are behind this. The scientists are basically bought and paid for. They're criminals. And they're, if it were not for the scientists, politicians and businessmen wouldn't have anything to sell or do. But the scientists are there, and is, you know, once again, just criminal activity. What else can you say about it? But testing, you only test for one or two species, and that is being shut down. We know from people who have done private measuring that it is coming into the United States constantly in the rain, in the wind. It's been tested all the way into Europe, so it comes all the way across the United States, goes across the Atlantic Ocean, and it's still, there's still enough concentration to be measured in Europe. So, and this is cumulative. Remember that these nuclear, basically toxins, nuclear waste, don't go away. They're going to be there in a million years. There's still going to be some there. And slowly, daily, this is coming in and polluting. There was an experiment somebody did with milk. They took a fresh jar of cow's milk. They put a Geiger counter up to it, which counts nuclear the nuclear activity in the sample, and they were able to get a reading on a Geiger counter from milk. Once again, absolutely insane. The typical way of filtering, you may want to ask, for some people have asked me, do my water filters take out nuclear waste? And the answer is, first of all, if it were just the individual atoms in the nuclear waste, then really, no, that's not going to take them out. But what happens with the nuclear particles, they tend to attach to dust and dirt and small particles. They tend to attach. And therefore, when you filter, what you're taking out is the dust that they're attached to. But a little bit stronger flow rate, and all of a sudden, those atoms can break loose from the dust and flow in, contaminate your filter system, etc. I have the pre-filter, which does filter out the, one of the purposes of that is to filter out radiation. It's called the chemical radiation oil pre-filter. And this was designed back in the 2008 floods for basically contaminated flood water, so you could first clean the flood water before you put it into your nice clean gravity water filter to then use in your kitchen. So it was, it made a two-stage process, because otherwise you're just dumping this sludge water into your nice clean water filter. But the problem with radiation is that it still can get through. So there is a way to filter radiation if you're ever really hard pressed for it. The old, back in the 1950s civil defense days, they filtered radiation in water back when we were, you know, looking at mutually assured destruction, mutual annihilation with Russia. They used to tell people, here's what you do. You take a bucket, punch some holes in the bottom, put a T-shirt in there, throw some dirt in there, and pour your water through that. And that's a way of getting the radiation out. It's probably going to taste like mud, some pretty rotten coffee, but that's a way of getting the radiation out, because what are you doing? The radiation attaches to dirt and dust particles, and it then gets filtered out into that dirt that's in your bucket. And, of course, the pre-filter is somewhat the same concept. You have layers of paper filters, and then you have the powder medium in there. And, of course, those are food and medical grade. It's not dirt from your backyard. So that's a modern way to be prepared if there were ever a nuclear accident. But what we got to do is start shutting down these nuclear power plants. Obama wants to shut down the coal plants and go strictly on nuclear. Well, anybody, I mean, that, the guy's such an idiot, he doesn't know anything. Around 15% of the electricity in the United States is generated from nuclear power. Probably around 50 to 60% is generated from coal, and the rest is generated from natural gas and other types of oil-related products. But nuclear only makes up about 15% of our electrical consumption, but is in a lot of critical areas, like the big city areas. That's why where you find the nuclear reactors. And typically, they're about a 500 megawatt complex. But you have to burn about 10 times that much fuel and create that 10 times that much heat to get the amount of electricity we use. So it's tremendously wasteful. I think it was Albert Einstein made a comment one time. He said, burning nuclear fuel is not a good way to heat water. You know, and it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek, facetious statement regarding the use of nuclear fuel. It simply was not a good idea. But with only 20% of the electricity being generated by nuclear power, how are we going to fulfill the energy requirements of this country, of the United States, or any country, if you try and take away coal? I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. But there again, Obama's being paid off or bought under the table or whatever's going on, forced, whatever the case may be, to push the United States into nuclear power. I mean, this is just evil stupidity. That's the only thing you can say about it. Really, there have not been a lot of nuclear power plants built in the United States in the last 25 years. So the lifetime, commissioned lifetime for a nuclear power plant is typically about 20 years, and then it should be decommissioned. But that's not what's going on. They keep these things running. They keep reauthorizing their commission, and they shouldn't be. Plus, they're using this very high-octane fuel that didn't even exist when they were designed and built. This is a huge problem. So anyway, something I'm trying to work on in the background. I've done radio shows. All I can say is that, we could solve this problem if we just used a little bit less electricity. We could start shutting down these nuclear power plants. It would be very easy to save 15% electricity in the United States and shut down all the nuclear power plants, and then start introducing my wing generators on a large scale and start using wind, offshore wind, and places where there's a lot of wind, which there are quite a few in the United States, have that wind energy trucked around the country. That's a very easy thing to do, and then we could start living without all of that energy cost. But there again, it's all about money. It's all about the money and the power and the insanity to keep that going by the people that control those industries. Absolutely insane. I might add one note here that people who are exposing this are being targeted. People who are right on the front scene trying to expose especially the Pacific Ocean, the people that are working in the river systems there, and the up by Vancouver, you know, that area down to Oregon and along the California coast, people that are very, very active at exposing the poisoning of the Pacific Ocean have very, very much, many of them have been targeted. So this is a very vicious campaign to shut down any information going out to the public. I saw a very interesting analysis about a week ago, and this was put together by a guy, I believe from Brazil, an engineer, and he showed how the Japanese pictures that were returned from the moon do not correspond with the pictures that NASA's pictures that were returned from the moon. But in looking at both of them, something that I've said all along comes out, is that neither one of them represent the moon surface the way it should be. It looks like both of them were done in a studio. And the other thing that was pointed out by this gentleman in the video is that if you scroll down to the bottom, you look and you see that Russia, the European Space Agency, the United States, and Japan, those four agencies, NASA in other words, from the United States, the European Space Agency, the Russian Space Agency, and the Japanese Space Agency, are all credited at the bottom, and they have their little symbol down there. What it tells you is that all of these agencies are in cahoots to bring completely false information to you on planet Earth. And so the end result is that these are smoke screens. These are misinformation smoke screens keeping you, the public, from understanding anything about the moon. This is really the dark ages of misinformation. And that's something I've said, that these pictures don't represent what the lunar surface really looks like. So at any rate, I've got about a minute to go here. I want to talk, just to divert my attention back to the water filters. I'm very proud of my water filter line. It's the water filter elements, and this is some confusion. I just introduced the Imperial, the double wide filter elements, the same GF technology as the standard size. They're double the diameter, which means they're double the surface area on the outside, which means the flow rate is twice as much as the standard filter. Now, a lot of people don't need that. But the other thing is that because it's twice the diameter, you have four times the volume. So they literally last four times as long. There's four times as much matter in them as there are in the standard size. So they literally last four times longer. Their lifetime is longer. So dollar for dollar, the Imperials are better. They do fit all of the standard full-size water filters that have been built over the last 25 years, whether my brand or any other brand. And that is because all of these filter elements had their route, their root source in a design that came literally out of England back in the 1800s. And a brand I used to sell called Dalton, but I've moved on, and now I have a much better filter. My name branded filters, the GF filters, JMCC water filters, filter elements, which take out everything. You don't need add-on filters, etc. But anyway, I just wanted to clarify that all of these filter elements that I'm selling now fit all of the filters that have been built, the full-size ones, including the Traveler, my smaller one. All of these fit in there too. So at any rate, just see the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.